going to talk with the author of the new book, The Impossible Presidency, The Rise and Fall of America's Highest Office. And I'm sure you will want to take part as we talk with Jeremy Suri. We'll also talk with Professor Suri about some current issues in the news, including the escalating war of words between Donald Trump and North Korea. And I think we'll also talk about the politics going on with the NFL and the Star-Spangled Banner protests. And we will welcome your input on all of these issues. But first, I'm Joy Cardine with Mike Arnold, and this is the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. WPR counts on you to help keep these discussions on the air. So please give now at WPR.org. Or 888-202-2552. And Mike, there is a very special challenge going on this hour.
There is indeed. Right now we have a dollar for dollar match up to $4,500. We don't want to leave a dollar on the table, so make your pledge now. This generous match is from current members, including 9XM Leadership Circle members Dr. Maureen Murphy and Larry Whitney from Baraboo, and Phil and Marilyn Hansotia from Ellison Bay, and it means that they'll match every single dollar you give.
It is their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. So this is a great time to pledge. You can double your support of the programs you love with this dollar-for-dollar match going on right now. So give now. It will be doubled at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Dollar-for-dollar match in effect. And on this show, you hear multiple sides of an issue, so you can make up your own mind. We've been so lucky to have Joy leading us through all sides of the story. And while we're sad to see her go, we can still count on hearing a fair, inclusive conversation every morning on the Ideas Network. Joy's legacy will live on in the mornings here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Together, we keep the issues of the day, have some fun, and we'll follow with curiosity, and we'll learn.
I have loved doing this over the years. There really is nothing else like this on the radio. It really is unique. It's something special. Your support is a vital part of what makes it all possible. You are the most important source of funding of Wisconsin Public Radio. Make your pledge during this, our fall membership drive, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and support the public radio programs that you count on.
And we have a dollar for dollar match in effect right now. Make your pledge and it will be doubled, thanks to our friends who are contributing some money this morning in support of you giving. When you give today, become a sustainer too. As a sustaining member, you give an amount, say $10 or $15 a month, and it will automatically come out of your bank account or your credit card. Your monthly gift will continue until you ask us to make a change.
This means that we can depend on you the way you depend on us, day in and day out, year in and year out. You're still in control, and you can change your giving at any time. So become a sustainer right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
This pledge drive, we've got a fun new thank you gift, the WPR Beanie. But that begs the question, what is a beanie?
A beanie is a beanie baby. Didn't I have one when I was a kid?
When I hear the word beanie, I often think of Spanky from the Little Rascals and the little hat he wore.
I think of a hat, and I think of that kind of hat that has the little propeller on it.
It's a hat that teenagers wear on their back of their head, and it looks like it's going to fall off.
The new WPR Beanie is a simple knit cap with the WPR logo on the cuff, and you don't have to be a teenager to wear it. Ask for yours when you give $10 a month or more. We think you're going to love it.
We know you'll love it, your knit cap, not your beanie. Pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, $10 a month for this hat that will keep you warm and when you need it, and will show off your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine with Mike Arnold, asking for your support of WPR during our fall membership drive. Maybe your gift is $10 a month. Maybe it's something else. Whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount.
That's right. And we do have a dollar for dollar match in effect right now from current members, including 9XM Leadership Circle members Dr. Maureen Murphy and Larry Whitney from Baraboo, and Phil and Marion Hansotia from Ellison Bay. So dollar for dollar match. We have $4,500. Now, the only way this works is if you pledge, though. If you don't pledge, we don't get the match. And one way that you may want to pledge is at the 9XM Leadership Circle level, which is $100 a month or more. Take advantage of this match and double your support for WPR programs when you give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you to Mark from Nina, who says, I started listening to WPR about 20 years ago when I got my first job after college. WPR was the first nonprofit I donated to, and 20 years later, I'm still listening. And more than a responsibility, it feels like a privilege to give. Thank you so much, Mark. And thanks to Grant from Round Lake, who says, we are truly going to miss Joy. Thank you, Grant. I'll miss you, too. Brent from Janesville says that he really enjoys the programming and will continue to support WPR. And thanks us, WPR, for what you do. Thank you for all of your support. Still time for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Remember, we have that dollar-for-dollar match going on up to $4,500. So still lots of room for you to double your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Now, it is my pleasure to welcome our guest. Very happy to have back with us a guest who we spoke with when he used to be at UW-Madison in the history department. He has since moved to Texas, but we still have him on the air quite frequently to talk about issues that are going on in the news. He has a new book out. It is called The Impossible Presidency, The Rise and Fall of America's Highest Office. And Jeremy Suri is the Mack Brown Distinguished Chair for Leadership in Global Affairs, History, and Public Affairs at the University of Texas, Austin. He's also the LBJ School of Public Affairs, the Strauss Center for International Security and Law. He used to teach at UW-Madison, is the author of a number of books. His latest is The Impossible Presidency, and his book tour will take him to Madison. He'll be coming back home, so to speak, on November 1st and 2nd. Good morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Joy, it's a pleasure to be on, and I can't believe you're retiring. My gosh.
I know. It's it's been 31 years now, and it's time to move on to that next chapter, as they say. Friday is my last day. I will miss greatly speaking with scholars like you and our listeners, but I think I can get involved in some other ways to help make the world a better place from without being in front of a microphone. So thank you very much for all of your time with us, too. Let me ask you, I guess just generally, I do want to talk to you about some current issues of the day, but why do you say the presidency is impossible?
Well, what my book shows is that the office of the presidency began as a relatively small office for a relatively small country. And our first 150 years or so, presidents achieved quite a lot and helped Americans achieve quite a lot. But really, since the mid-20th century, as our country has grown so large, our obligations and responsibility have grown so large, the office has grown, but it has not become effective enough to manage all of the responsibilities, all of the expectations. And as a consequence, presidents, like so much of us, are doing more and more in various areas and achieving less. And I believe we're at a moment now where the presidency is truly in crisis, because instead of trying to reform the office, people are just trying to blow it up. And so that's how we've come to this really impossible moment.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people on our Facebook page are assuming that this is a book that is saying that that is a book that's anti-President Trump. You didn't write this book to just be a critical review of President Trump, did you?
No, gosh, no. In fact, the book was finished right before the election, and those who read the book will see that Donald Trump only comes up in the epilogue, and the epilogue is the one part of the book that I wrote after the November 2016 election. The book is 99%, 300 pages or so, about the presidents before Trump, the presidents who I think were the most significant presidents. And the book is not really about the presidents per se, even though it's built around different administrations. The way I think about it is this, Joy. We have lots and lots of discussion of the drivers of the car, but very little of the car itself, the machinery of the presidency. And this is a book about the history of the presidency and why, really, for about 50 to 60 years now, we haven't had a truly great president, and why leadership is in crisis throughout our society. I believe Donald Trump is a manifestation of a broader problem, and the book is about the broader problem, not about Trump himself.
You do go as far as saying, though, that an outsider like Donald Trump cannot succeed as president. Why was he doomed to fail?
Well, one of the things I try to show in the book, and this is just based on the historical record, is that as the office has become larger and more important and serving more and more needs in more parts of the world, the issues are more complex, and it is almost impossible for someone who does not have some internal understanding of government, of the issues, of the players across the globe, to be able to do this job. And whether you're a real estate developer or a professor or a radio announcer, none of those things prepare you to be president. Having inside knowledge is crucial. You and I don't want an outsider to fly our airplane who hasn't been trained, or we don't want an outsider to diagnose us when we go to the doctor. Why should we have an outsider with his hands on the nuclear codes?
Yeah. One reason, though, that people say they voted for Trump was because they felt America needed someone to shake things up in Washington and break up the status quo, the drain the swamp stuff. Do you see any legitimacy in that?
Well, I think what my book tries to show is that there's a reason why the American public is dissatisfied with the presidency and with the last few presidents we've had, including Bush and Obama. And I believe, and I hope my book shows, that American voters are smart. They see a problem. The concern I have is that we've identified the problem, but we're not pursuing a useful solution. Blowing up the office is not going to actually change the things that are the problems with the office. Blowing up is actually reinforcing the problems. Look what's happened since Trump's become president. We've talked about trying to cut our budgets and reduce government, but we've also increased our obligations around the world. It looks like we might be at war with North Korea very soon. And we're not getting at the fundamental problem, which is that many, many citizens have needs that government is not serving. So blowing up the office is a symptom of a deeper problem, but it is not a solution to that problem.
Well, I did want to ask you about what we're seeing going on between President Trump and North Korea. Seems to just be escalating. The Kim Jong-un, North Korea's leader, said on Friday that it may test a hydrogen bomb over the Pacific Ocean. That threat came after Trump's UN speech, in which he said if America is forced to defend itself, it would totally destroy North Korea. President Trump also referred to Kim as Rocket Man. He it got worse over the weekend. He started referring to him as Little Rocket Man, and said that that he would be gone soon. Paraphrasing there, talk some about maybe what you think the founders would be telling Trump to say about how about this situation.
Well, one of the passages I quote from Thomas Jefferson in the book is where Jefferson makes the point. This is very early on. I quote this. That as the United States grows in power, one of the risks is that the power we develop will destroy our virtue, and that the challenge is to grow powerful and remain attached to the virtues that make you a democratic and great society. And this is not just a criticism of Trump, but as the United States became the world power after World War II, we really lost sight of many of the values that in our best moments had made us a great country, had made us a country that was democratic. And this kind of rhetoric that we're seeing from President Trump, it's not unique to him. It's extreme in his case, however. It's certainly not effective at a policy level, and we can talk about that. But let me just say something about our values. The greatest strength we've had as an alliance builder, as a country people want to work with, is that people have seen us as a civilized, humane society in our best moments. And this kind of rhetoric actually helps Kim Jong-un and helps all of our enemies, because it makes us look like a belligerent, aggressive society. And I will say, in this sense, President Trump has done something I never thought anyone could do, which is that he's now made people around the world sympathetic to North Korea, sympathetic to Iran. It's like being the big bully on the playground. When you start flexing your muscles and yelling at people, everyone wants to side with the other people on the playground, and that's what's happened here. It is a disaster for our society and a disaster for our values.
Yeah, Professor Suri, I last heard you on Wisconsin Public Radio. Oh, it may have been less than a month ago when the North Korea-U.S. Tension was ratcheting up. You said that you were, frankly, more frightened than you had been in your life over this.
I am. I think we have the worst of all things here. We have, and this relates directly to my book, we have a leader in the United States who is making claims he cannot, impossible claims, claims he cannot fulfill, and he's backing himself into a corner. And we have a leader in North Korea who is doing the same. And we're going down a very, very dangerous path here where both leaders have more and more of an incentive to escalate, and both feel that their political survival might require going to war. That becomes, I think, more likely every single day. We just flew a whole series of bombers near the North Korean border yesterday. What happens if Kim Jong-un shoots one of them down? We're tempting him to do that, and then we have to respond, and this can very quickly reach a level of horrific warfare.
Our guest is Jeremy Suri. He is used to teach at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He is now with the University of Texas, Austin. He is the author of The Impossible Presidency, The Rise and Fall of America's Highest Office. We'll continue our conversation with him in just a moment, and we'll welcome you to weigh in on either the U.S.-North Korea issue. Maybe when we come back, I want to ask Professor Suri about the politics of the NFL and the Star Spangled Banner protests and what happened over the weekend with President Trump in the middle of it all. And we will welcome your thoughts on that at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are in our fall membership drive looking for your support. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are going to get back to our conversation with Jeremy Suri, the author of The Impossible Presidency, The Rise and Fall of America's Highest Office, in just a few minutes. But Mike Arnold is here right now with this important reminder about a really, really exceptional challenge that we have going on this hour during our fall membership drive.
Yeah, we have a dollar-for-dollar match, in effect, up to $4,500 right now. It's a great time to pledge because current members, including 9XM Leadership Circle members, will double every dollar you give. And we're getting that from Dr. Maureen Murphy and Larry Whitney of Bermu and Phil and Marilyn Hansosia from Ellison Bay. They will double your support right now, but up to $4,500. But we need to raise $4,500 to take advantage of that full match. So we hope you'll double the impact of your pledge right now and not leave a dollar on the table in this last Monday broadcast from Joy Cardine. Joy will be retired next Monday, so Kate Archer Kent will be filling in for her at that time. So make a pledge in honor of Joy and in honor of everything you hear on WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I truly am very, very touched and honored by your kind words as I approach retirement. But you, dear listener, deserve my thanks for being here, for joining our conversations, for supporting this program in many different ways. Now we are asking for your support financially at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. People who listen, people like you, provide the most significant share of WPR's budget. Your donation is an investment in Wisconsin Public Radio and in the programs that deliver the greatest value to you.
civil conversations, in-depth news, perspective on the world. Your contribution keeps independent public service radio on the air for you and for the entire community. So don't take that for granted. Give now. Dollar for dollar match in effect. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I'm Marcy from Madison, Wisconsin. I'm a sustainer of Wisconsin Public Radio. First of all, the word obsessed has been used with public radio. I've been listening to nothing but public radio for probably upwards of 20-some years. When I made a transition moving back to Wisconsin after being gone for 20-some years, it was a great way for me to sort of get back to what was going on, feeling involved. It was a great connection, and I think that's probably the word that I think of the most. I feel very connected when I'm listening to public radio. I'm a sustaining member because I don't have to think about it. Well, first of all, it's so easy. I don't have to do anything. I wish all my bills could just magically be paid that way. And although it's not a bill for what it gives back to me, it is something that I'm willing to pay for. It enriches my life. It's invaluable to me, so I'm happy to give back.
You can give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Joy Cardine with Mike Arnold asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Your gift of $10 a month or $20 a month, whatever amount you choose, that's the perfect amount.
That's right, because we have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now from current members, including 9XM Leadership Circle members Dr. Maureen Murphy and Larry Whitney from Baraboo and Phil and Marilyn Hansotia from Ellison Bay. Your gift of 50 turns to 100, 100 turns to 200. We have $2,500 left in that challenge. We want to take advantage of every single dollar. If we don't get $2,500 more in pledges, though, we'll have to turn some of that money back. And we wouldn't want to do that. You wouldn't want to do that. Take advantage of this match and double your support for WPR programs when you give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you to Joe from La Crosse, who says thank you for providing an essential source of news about government and politics. Thank you, Joe. A listener from Madison says, as a seeker of all things public radio, I say with confidence that Wisconsin Public Radio is the best, the very best. Thank you. Stephanie from Milwaukee says, I'm donating during the Joy Cardine show as a thank you to Joy for all the wonderful mornings that I've spent with her on my morning commute. While I no longer get to drive to work with Joy, I am happy to do my part to help continue the informative and entertaining programming that WPR provides. Stephanie and all, thank you so very, very much. WPR counts on listener support to pay for the programs that you value. And this show is going to be called The Morning Show, and it's going to continue on with Kate Archer Kent in the host's chair. So please do support it and get your pledge doubled. This is so exciting. We have this dollar-for-dollar match going on, and you can double your pledge, double your impact with your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. All right, let's get back to our conversation now with Jeremy Suri, who is the author of The Impossible Presidency, The Rise and Fall of America's Highest Office. And we welcome your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We have a new Facebook page. It's the Ideas Network Facebook page. There will no longer be a Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, so be sure to like the Ideas Network Facebook page and follow along on the conversations and see all the Ideas Network content there. Let's go back to the phones. Ed in West Dallas is with us. Hello, Ed.
Let me just say, Joy, that I'll use three words from Catullus for your retirement. Very great poem, Ave Atque Vale, hail and farewell. I want to talk about this idea of the presidency as totally subsumed with war and not subsumed at all with working class issues. For the entire history of our nation, up until FDR, the office of the presidency was anti-union, totally anti-worker, and we didn't get to Section 7 of the National Labor Relations Act until FDR and the 1937 Supreme Court decision. And we have seen how presidents just wreck their presidency because they get involved in war. A good example of that was Harry Truman. Another example, LBJ. We see Obama promising us the Employee Free Choice Act, and his entire presidency goes off on a tangent.
Ed, I'm going to jump in, and I want to thank you very much for your kind words, but because of our pledge drive, we do have limited time. And Professor Suri, how about presidents are too war-focused? War destroys the presidency and a whole lot more, and the president should be more focused on the economy and working people.
I think Ed has an excellent point. One of the things I show in the book, and this is just telling the history of the presidency, is that over time, presidents have spent more and more time on war, particularly since the late 19th century. And some of that has to do with the growing presence of the United States around the world and the growing set of interests the United States has felt obligated to fight to defend. And as presidents have become more warlike, especially with foreign wars, they've acted more and more unilaterally with less and less support from Congress and other parts of government. So this is a big problem, and it has distracted and diminished presidential attention and power for other domestic issues like labor issues. Lyndon Johnson is the classic example, where the Vietnam War certainly destroyed much of his great society set of programs. The only area where I would just add to what Ed said is on the issue of labor. I think presidents have, for quite a long time, played an important role in defending the interests and the rights of laborers. And it's not just Franklin Roosevelt, Theodore Roosevelt, and I talk about this in my book, very famously, in the early 20th century, takes on the mining and railroad corporate leaders to defend the rights of workers, forcing arbitration and forcing some of the most important early progressive legislation to defend workers' rights. He doesn't go as far as creating a National Labor Relations Board, but he does create a foundation for continued growth in labor and labor unions in the early 20th century. And Joy, this connects to our discussions of the NFL today. It is the role of the president not to attack workers for expressing their opinions and their rights of free expression. It is the role of the president from Theodore Roosevelt until today to defend the rights of workers to be free citizens and to freely express themselves even in times of war. And that's why President Trump's statements this weekend about athletes and condemning them for not doing what he wants them to do, that's a violation of the legacy of the presidency in a democratic society.
Yeah, I mean, let's just touch on this a little bit more. Over the weekend, President Trump took to Twitter to carry on his feud with the NFL that he started during a campaign stop in Alabama last week when he suggested that the NFL owners should fire any player who kneels in protest during the national anthem. And he called those players, I can't say the term on the radio, but I can say he called them SOBs. The NFL responded, but not in the way that Trump perhaps envisioned. Most owners were supporting the rights of their players to protest during the national anthem. And over the weekend, we did see a number of players on practically all of the teams exerting that right. Whether it's related to the book or not, Professor Suri, why in the world would Trump pick a fight with football?
Well, so this is directly related to the book. Mm-hmm. This is why it's so much fun to write about mm-hmm. this, because it does connect. Even though the book is historical, it does connect to these issues. Presidents are constantly, and this is a real problem, because of their power and because of the presence they have, the attention they grab, they're tempted to get involved in issues they shouldn't get involved in. And this is a classic example of that. There is no constitutional responsibility for the president to comment on whether people stand during the national anthem or not. It is a complete waste of time. And the president spent his time, and therefore the time of his administration, the time of everyone who works for him, thinking and talking about these issues over the weekend rather than dealing with things like North Korea or health care, issues where the president does have a responsibility. And the point I make in my book is that with every generation, presidents take on more of these issues. They create crises of their own that distract and degrade the machinery of government. There is a limited amount of time and energy that government has, and if you spin government's wheels in these useless directions, you are spinning our society into the grave, and that's what's happening now.
You know, Professor Suri, what about, there was North Korea and health care and, thousands of other issues that perhaps the president should be spending time on. Is there too many things a president needs to be spending time on? Can one person do it?
So this is really one of the big points of the book and where I think a historian can offer a useful perspective. Looking over 200 years of the presidency, I think it's pretty clear from the record that I describe in the book that presidents over time are taking on much more than they can handle, and every president really of the last five or six stinks in office. This is a problem from the early 20th century, but it gets worse and worse and worse. And so this is why, Joy, I think my book shows that our debates about big and small government are useless debates. It's not about big government versus small government. It's about what should we focus on. There are some things where we should be doing more, where presidents should be more involved, and there are other areas, many other areas, where presidents are involved where they should be doing less. So they should be saying much less, presidents, about bathrooms, much less about whether people kneel during the national anthem, and focusing on issues like natural disasters, like what's happened in Puerto Rico. I mean, the real tragedy of the last weekend, and this happens time and again, is a natural disaster or some other event occurs, hundreds of thousands of American citizens suffer, and presidents are talking and distracted by various other issues. It's too much. They need to show more discipline, and as I argue in the book, we might consider having more than one person do the job.
Yeah, so how does that work? How do you have more than one person do the job?
Well, this is something I didn't realize until I had done the research and looked at things comparatively. We're the only democracy right now in the world, the only major democracy that has one person do things. Most other governments, every other democracy, has a head of state and someone like a prime minister. So take the German example. They just had elections this weekend, of course. They have a president, a Bundespräsident, and they have a Bundeskanzler, a chancellor, or a prime minister. And there is some division of responsibility. In France, this division of responsibility says that the president does foreign policy, the prime minister does mostly domestic policy. I'm not saying we have to divide it that way. But I am saying that this single office, one person doing all of these jobs that are divided in other societies, that worked for about 150 years when we were small. As we become so big, that has become impossible right now. And every major corporation I know has a CFO and a COO. Every university has a president and a provost. Why are we investing everything in one person in one office?
We will return to our conversation with Jeremy Suri, who is the author of The Impossible Presidency, The Rise and Fall of America's Highest Office. Talk about how this happened and what should be done about it, and welcome more of your questions and views. We will get back to that in just a moment, but first, Mike Arnold is here because this is our fall membership drive, and Mike, we have good news.
That's right. We met our dollar-for-dollar match thanks to current members who contributed that, the 9XM Leadership Circle members, Dr. Maureen Murphy and Larry Whitney from Baraboo, and Phil and Marilyn Hansotia from Ellison Bay. They doubled the dollars you gave. It was their way of inspiring you to support WPR, and many people took that inspiration and made their pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. But we're still asking for your support. We hope that you'll make your pledge now.
Oh, yeah. We still have one pledge to go to make the hourly goal, even though we met the dollar-for-dollar match. We still need one more pledge, and I'd like to go beyond that as we fell a little bit short in earlier this morning. So let's get back on track. Show your support for great guests, frankly, like Jeremy Suri, who is the author of The Impossible Presidency. You're able to participate in these conversations. You're able to hear from a wide variety of renowned guests like Professor Suri. And it's all possible because of your support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
As this discussion this hour shows, the world is pretty complex, and it gets more complex all the time. And you rely on public radio to turn complicated scientific studies, politics, and the news of the day into understandable language and have a conversation. And we believe everybody in Wisconsin can take part in this discussion. Wisconsin Public Radio helps make sense of complex issues so you know how they'll affect you.
WPR relies on your financial support to bring you programs that are relevant to your life. That's why we ask you to make a contribution. How about making your first ever contribution right now, say $10 a month during this, the fall membership drive at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
2017 marks WPR's first 100 years of broadcasting. And even though some of your favorite shows weren't around in 1917, what if they were?
Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, with President Woodrow Wilson's second term looming, we'll check in on what this could mean for the temperance movement.
We'll talk to a UW professor about the passing of Buffalo Bill Cody and the legacy he left behind.
And for Food Friday, we sample the hottest new food invention, marshmallow fluff.
That's a fad that's not going to catch on. It's all coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.
Okay, so maybe Central Time wasn't around to cover 1917, but we've been through a lot in our first 100 years, and it's all thanks to listeners like you. Here's to the next century of broadcasting. Help build our future now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I'm Joy Cardine with Mike Arnold, and we are asking for your support of WPR during our fall membership drive. Maybe your gift is $10 a month, maybe it's $20, maybe it's something else. Whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount.
That's right. It only takes a few minutes to make your pledge. Supporting Wisconsin Public Radio is a great thing to do with a few minutes of your time. All we need is your name, contact information, how much you'd like to give, and how you'd like to pay.
Your gift supports the stories, the programs, the conversations that keep you connected to the world. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Support these valuable conversations, this civil place where you can come together with other people in Wisconsin and talk about important issues and understand them better. This is a unique place. You know that. Support it. It's listener supported at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you to Jeff from Madison, who says, I'm a sustainer and I made an additional gift today for Joy. Oh, Jeff, thank you. He misses me already. I miss you too. I'll be here through Friday and I'll be listening after that. Linda from Brookfield says, we love WPR, so we pledged. You can pledge too at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with our guest who says the office of the presidency has evolved into chaos and that it is impossible. He is the author of The Impossible Presidency, The Rise and Fall of America's Highest Office. He is Jeremy Suri. And he is the Mack Brown Distinguished Chair for Leadership in Global Affairs, History, and Public Affairs at the University of Texas, Austin. He used to teach history at UW-Madison, and he will be coming back to Madison on his book tour in November. I won't be working in this host chair, but I think I'm going to go check him out. I'll be able to do stuff like that when I'm retired. His book tour will take him to Madison on November 1st and 2nd. We do have some callers that want to get in on this, but I did want to ask you, we didn't even get to Professor Suri. You called FDR the last great president. Why does FDR rate so highly in your opinion?
Well, I think FDR really makes the president into a national healer. I argue in the book that Washington and those who come after him use the office to unite the country. Lincoln, Theodore Roosevelt, and that group of presidents used the presidency to develop and build the modern economy with railroads and the Navy and industrial development and ending slavery, of course, which is the most important thing they do. And then FDR is the president who takes this growing capitalist society and uses the office of the presidency to help those who are left behind, like Ed mentioned before, those in the labor movement, African Americans and others, citizens who are having trouble keeping up. He uses the office of the presidency to provide opportunity and healing for those who are not doing as well. And the office grows rose enormously under Roosevelt, internationally and domestically, and he's still able to barely manage it, but just barely. And after him, every other president, even those who try to model themselves on Roosevelt, like Kennedy and Johnson, they're just doing too much, and they end up working harder than Roosevelt and achieving a lot less. So he just barely manages it. He creates the most successful presidency in our history, but he's also a tragic figure, Joy, because after him, it's just too much of a beast for anyone to manage.
Yeah, and you say that the American people lost respect or more respect for the presidency under Bill Clinton and Barack Obama. Why is that?
I think from Clinton's point forward, Americans are looking for a figure to solve all of these problems we've been discussing without thinking deeply about reforming our behavior or reforming our political institutions. We fetishize from historicizing. We fetishize these institutions, and we don't want to make any sacrifices, and we look for some smart dude to go into office and fix everything for us. And that's why these enormously talented individuals, and I think Clinton and Obama are two of the most talented presidents we've ever had, they're set up to fail because they're asked to do too much. They have a focused opposition, and they don't have enough support for what people want them to do, and so they're set up to fail.
John in Madison is with us. Hi, John.
Hi. Well, I think the reason the executive is so distorted is that we've been in continual warfare with various countries since World War II to maintain our huge empire. In other words, I'm saying the maintenance of our empire is the primary problem we have here. We have an archipelago of like 800 to 1,000 bases in 130 countries, and we more or less call it shots for the rest of the world. Chalmers Johnson's book, The Sorrows of Empire, and Alfred McCoy's new book, the In the Shadows of the American Century, deal with this. My question to you is this. One, I don't think the American people really realize that we have an empire, but my question to you is, should we have an empire, and can we maintain an empire?
Yeah. This is a great question from John, and I'm glad you mentioned in particular my former colleague's wonderful book. Al McCoy is a great historian of many of these issues. He's at the University of Wisconsin, of course. It's definitely true that the United States grows in its international obligations and interests. Look, as you say, John, at the archipelago of military bases we have around the world. And this is part of the problem, because the president is trying to manage the world with an office that was barely designed to manage the United States. And he's also taken on responsibilities at home. And so one of the points that I make in the epilogue of the book is that this historical, this history should teach us that less is more. And instead of continuing to grow our obligations and grow our commitments, we should think about reducing that. A smaller republic and a smaller set of issues for the president to deal with might be better. And that might mean, for example, that we should be paying a lot less attention to the Middle East than we are, and sending fewer soldiers over there. Perhaps we shouldn't be in Afghanistan.
You say that the presidency is going to have to be remade after Trump's time in office is over. Talk more about what you mean by remade.
Well, I think this is one of the silver linings in having this very disruptive president, is that it shows us how this office has deep, deep problems built into it, how we select people, the problems with our electoral system. I think that's evident to everyone, and the problems in the ways the office operates. The founders did not intend, Joy, for the president to be able to start a war in East Asia without getting an affirmative vote from Congress or going to the American people. But that is, in fact, what Donald Trump could do today if he wanted. So I'm hoping that this moment of crisis becomes a moment when the history I've recounted becomes evident to people, and I hope they buy my book for it to be evident to them, obviously, and that we begin to think deeply about reforming our institutions. We've done this in the past. World War II and the Great Depression opened that moment. The Civil War opened that moment. I'm hoping we can have a similar moment of institutional reform triggered by crisis, but hopefully not a crisis where millions of people die.
Well, Jeremy on Facebook wonders how super PACs and special interests and money in politics plays into all of this.
Well, it's a big part of this. And one of the big problems is that although money has been a part of American politics from the start, Charles Beard wrote about this 100 years ago, nonetheless, the scale and scope matter. Just as the office has grown exponentially, the amount of money in politics has grown more than exponentially in the last 50 to 100 years, and that has allowed special interests to have much more influence. And this is a function of the presidency being too large. If you're doing too many things, there are too many points where people can find an interest you have in paying you off to do something that you wouldn't otherwise do. A more focused president would also be more focused on the public interest and less so on special interests.
I wanted to also ask you about coming up in our next hour during On Point. There's going to be more on the Trump-Russia investigation in the latest there. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on how weakened the Trump presidency is by this investigation even going on and where you think this might lead.
Well, I think the Trump presidency is very weakened by the Russia investigation in two ways. First of all, it makes it impossible for the president to conduct policy toward Russia, because right now that's an area where anything he does is being questioned immediately for good reason, and Russia is a major rival, adversary, and sometimes ally of ours in the Middle East and elsewhere. So this makes it very hard for him to make policy in that area. It delegitimizes everything he does. And second, and here's the even bigger issue, it distracts us from some of the other real problems. Now, I think the Russia investigation is serious and should go forward, so I don't mean to say it's trivial. But I do mean to say that we have other big, big problems that, once again, we're not focusing on. Issues of climate change, natural disasters, health care. Mm-hmm. And these are really not getting the attention they deserve as a consequence of this ongoing investigation. And so I'm for the investigation, but I'm for us in the future making sure that we don't get ourselves in a situation where this overgrown office is involved in so many things, involved in so many, triggering so many investigations, that we cannot focus on what are the issues of national interest which are being neglected today.
And finally, how hopeful are you that the presidency will return to its original purpose or integrity?
Well, I don't think we're going to go back. And my book is not about our going back. That's antiquarianism. That's not historical thinking. But I do hope we can learn the lessons from history. We have, over the last 200 years, always pushed to make ourselves bigger and more powerful and pushed consistently to create a more powerful presidency. And I think we can see from this book that that's not necessarily the right path for us going forward. And this returns to John's point as well, I think. A country that might be a little less involved in all parts of the world and a little more focused on fewer interests, with a presidency that's more focused on those interests, would probably be in the interests of our country as a whole.
Well, it's been a pleasure, Jeremy. Thank you very much. And maybe I'll see you in November.
I look forward to it, Joy, and thank you again for just a wonderful show today, as always, and I will miss being on the radio with you.
Thank you very much. Jeremy Suri, formerly with UW-Madison in the History Department, and now with the University of Texas, Austin, and he is the author of the new book, The Impossible Presidency, The Rise and Fall of America's Highest Office. And my boss, Mike Arnold, is here to share with us the very latest on the fall membership drive. We are here for the last couple of minutes of the program to encourage your pledge to support Wisconsin Public Radio.
Yes, and we're making great progress today. In this hour, we are just three pledges away from getting 50 pledges in this hour, which would be sort of a nice little milestone to hit. So hopefully we can do that. Doesn't matter how much you pledge. The important thing is to make your pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Yeah, thanks so much. We did meet that challenge that we had going on, that dollar-for-dollar match. Thank you so much for your support for that. We went over our goal for 40 pledges. Let's hit at least 50 before we sign off this hour. Support the programs that you enjoy, that you value, like this one, with your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Yes, this is a great conversation that we had this hour, and there are a lot of good conversations to be had here at Wisconsin Public Radio. It's a great place for you to come with the rest of the state and talk about issues that are of great importance. And We actually are very close to a $10,000 hour, which is a sign that it was a really good hour of programming. And actually, if you made a pledge as a 9XM Leadership Circle member, you would push us over that $10,000 mark. And it doesn't really mean anything necessarily, but it's a great way of getting closer to that overall goal. And 9XM members, they contribute $100 a month or $1,200 a year. It makes WPR the sustainable resource it is. That's about what people pay for cable TV, for example. Think about all the news and information and education you get from Wisconsin Public Radio, and make that 9XM leadership gift right now, and you'll be supporting WPR today, tomorrow, and well into the future.
Help us stay strong. Help us continue to grow with your leadership gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Make a pledge in the amount that works for you. Help us try to get to that 50 pledge revised goal at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Just three pledges away from meeting that goal. We can do that. I think that's pretty doable. You can join people like Joe from La Crosse, who says, thanks for providing an essential source of news about government and politics. If you're like Joe and you appreciate that, make a pledge at any level right now. Or Jeff from Madison, who says, I'm a sustainer and I made an additional gift today for Joy. Do that at 888-202-2552 or WPR.org. And thanks.
And thank you for your support.